This is your host, Julio Martinez, and my poor eyesight, looking at my scribbled handwriting, the director is Don Fishback.
Dan Fishback, yeah.
Dan Fishback.
Whatever, I've been called worse.
That's yes. And you have staged, I have to call this a revival, because I first saw this in 1959.
Wow, so you saw certainly one of the original productions then.
Yes, this was the original production. There was only one altered cast member, my friend, Terry, who came into the cast.
Sure, Terry Ralston.
Terry Ralston.
Yeah.
And I got to see the show a couple of times and portions of it a lot of different times.
It's certainly a revival of a review, and you know it's such an interesting show because, as we were talking about off air, the show was incredibly apropos at the time it was first done, given sort of the framework of what was happening in America in the late 50s and early and into the late 60s, and today too. You know, what's happening in our world today certainly makes it apropos for today's audience too, I think.
I was curious, what brought this into your sphere of interest, and why do it?
Well, it's a good question. Ron Saucy, the artistic director over at the Odyssey Theater, and I were talking about doing some sort of a small musical, and this one came up. And this one has always intrigued me because this is a show whose songs were not necessarily written for the theater. You know, Jacques Brel was a poet in many sense of the word. And the lyrics that he writes and the music that he writes have all the sort of beauty of poetry, and yet they still work as theater lyrics. They're sort of instantly comprehensible on one level, and yet on another level reveal so much more depth under the surface. And I think that part of that fact is because they were written to be sung in clubs and you know, coffee houses in France and in Belgium, and they're this sort of strange hybrid of 18th and 19th century art songs coupled with 1960s protest songs. And although they are quite dark at times, there is an undying optimism, I think, that we have found, you know, Susan and Michael and the other two cast members, Mark Franker and Miyuki Miyagi, we found in our work together that there's also this underlying optimism that permeates the entire thing, which drew me to it initially.
I have to ask Susan and Michael, you look too young to have been involved in this way back when. Were you familiar with this composer?
I actually was lucky enough to have the original cast album in an LP form.
Ah.
And my father, who's on his mother's side, was Belgic. They were from the Wallons, so they did speak French.
Ah.
So he was very drawn to the music, and he liked Jacques Brel's music. And he gave me this album when I was pretty young. And I'm not sure what he thought I would think of some of the songs, because they do get kind of dark, and they are very revealing. But he said, this is important music, and I want you to have this in your collection. And I think you're going to find someday that this music will speak to you. And lo and behold, here I am, being able to be a part of a wonderful production that really does help for myself and as well as an audience member to really look at how we live our lives and how that also will impact a group or even the world in terms of the way that we are treating each other.
How about you, Michael?
I honestly knew nothing about Jacques Brel whatsoever. When Dan asked me to come in and sing for them, I listened to a lot of his songs, and I told my parents I'm going in for this musical that's a review of Jacques Brel's songs, and they freaked out. So I'm sure in my childhood...
That's because they thought you were studying dentistry, though, in all fairness.
Yes, exactly. They were very upset. No, they were very excited because they love Jacques Brel, and being from Europe, he was a big part of their musical upbringing, and so... I'm really loving that I'm able to fall in love with him, and you know, I'm able to connect with my parents and older generations on a new musical level.
And I realize that talking about Jacques Brel, we're talking to a generation, many of whom have never heard of the man. And so I thought it was my duty to introduce him. So I would like you to listen to Jacques Brel doing one of his own songs, His Own Way.
Ne me quitte pas, il faut oublier tout, peut s'oublier qui s'enfuit déjà, oublier le temps
des malentendus et le temps perdu à savoir comment oublier ces heures qui tuaient parfois à coups de pourquoi le cœur du bonheur ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas. Moi, je t'offrirai des perles de pluie venues de pays où il ne pleut pas. Je creuserai la terre jusqu'après ma mort pour couvrir ton corps d'or et de lumière. Je ferai un domaine où l'amour sera roi, où l'amour sera loi, où tu seras reine. Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas. Ne me quitte pas.
I know he's going to get more into it now.
Yeah.
But that is Jacques Brel. Mm-hmm.
He has such an amazing power to his voice, and yet, you know, he's, in some ways it's such a simple sound, and in other ways it's such a very incredibly deep and complex sound. And, you know, he toured for 50 weeks a year, usually 6 or 7 nights a week, and he chain smoked like a chimney, and to be able to maintain that quality of voice.
And he looked like a matinee idol.
Oh, yeah.
Very
handsome guy. Man. Very handsome guy.
And so it makes one wonder, how do you take his works and find a dramatic through line?
It's a great question. when the show was originally created, you know, in the 60s, the conventional wisdom, I think, in theater, certainly the musical theater, was that there had to be a through line or a conventional linear plot to things. And I think what we discover here is that every rule in the theater, no matter how hardcore, has to be eventually broken. So then along comes, you know, sort of Company and a Chorus Line and, you know, these shows that break that. And so especially when you have a show with 25 seemingly independent songs, how do you create some sort of dramatic context for them? And, you know, what I say to the audience coming in, and I say this in my director's note in the program too, is that the context is your own experience. You know, I really believe that. This is this production in particular is minimalist in every sense of the word. There is not a big set. There is not a bright costume, and there are no costume changes. There is no moving scenery and hydraulics and, you know, everything that you might find in a expensive production, because we believe so in the words that Brel gives us and the music that Brel gives us, and the context of one's life is, I think, enough to create a through line for the piece. You know, we look outside today and we see how we treat each other, as Susan was saying, or we turn on the news and we see what's happening in our government or in the world or, you know, in Syria or other parts of the Middle East. And it's tough not to be affected by the words that you're hearing about, you know, love and friendship and war and peace and some of the other recurring themes in the show. So rather than a through line, I think you're going to find that there are recurring themes.
I saw the video that you sent me, and it was very interesting. It was of the rehearsal process. Mm-hmm. So, Susan and Michael, I get the feeling you were sort of towing your way, discovering as you went through this.
It was actually a wonderful process, of which I am have much respect for how Dan brought us through with all the things that we would endure and try, and gave us the freedom to go deep and to go raw. At times, you know, Burrell's music is shining a light on us, and it's not pretty. You know, even when it's stuff he thinks he brings that's in an amusing way, it's pointing an ugly finger at us. And so we had the freedom to commit to finding it and to cultivating where we wanted to go emotionally, and commit to really be able to express what Burrell is trying to say.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a journey. I don't think any one person knew exactly what they wanted to the show to look like or to sound like, and it was wonderful being able to discover that with everyone. Definitely a journey and discovery, and being able, Dan was so kind in letting us, it doesn't have to sound pretty. Dan and our musical director, Anthony, they were saying it doesn't have to sound beautiful all the time. It has to sound human and real, and I think that that comes along with providing a dramatic context to the songs.
Back then at that period, this style of singing was quite common. And I think the music of Bob Dylan and other people who were more narrative than melodious made this more familiar than it is now. So, Michael, what's your background? Was mm-hmm. this a different style for you?
It was definitely, I'd never done a musical that was completely sung through before. My experience in musicals themselves were very slim. I'd done mostly straight plays, and so to come into this as someone who sees himself as an actor who can sing, it was a great challenge, but it was, you know, at the end of the day, these songs are as you said, narrated, they're acted. That's the importance.
Susan, you've done a number of musicals. Had you done any Jacques Brel before?
Not in this manner. I have sung some songs of Jacques Brel. I also have songs I do from Edith Piaf, who is that uh-huh. same, right from mm-hmm. her gut, right from her heart. So to do this in this manner of an entire theater piece that was nothing but his music, I found very challenging to really commit emotionally and physically to the whole show. The four of us are on stage all the time. And it's a wonderful camaraderie of support throughout the entire experience. And it really helps you to just emote and be present and commit as hard as you can.
Is there an intermission? I don't remember.
There is an intermission. There's a 15 intermission, not because we think the audience necessarily needs it, but because this is an exhausting show. There's 25 songs.
Water.
Right. They need water.
What's the total length of the show?
The running time is about 95 minutes.
Yeah, that's
total.
What I remember.
Yeah.
And I don't remember an intermission, but I guess there was one.
You know, there have been productions of it that have been done without an intermission, but it is written in two acts, and so I think it's important to sort of take that mm-hmm. break. You know, and at the end of the first act, many of the audiences have no idea what they're seeing. You know, I hope in the best possible way, and that it's this overwhelming experience of both emotion and story, because this is a unique piece. This is four actors playing one voice, basically, you know, the voice of Brel. And we get to know Brel's personality. We get to know his politics, his fears, what he cherishes. We get a glimpse of how much he misses his childhood in the song Jackie, or we see his sort of mostly negative feelings about family in the song Timid Frida and Funeral Tangle. Tango, not Funeral Tangle. That's another comic number. So.
We're going to get a chance to hear the original ensemble from Jacques Brel Is Alive and Well and Living in Paris. This is from the 1959 production At the Village Gate, and we're going to be hearing them all.
And if one day I should become a singer with a Spanish bum who sings for women of great virtue, I'd sing to them with a guitar I borrowed from a coffee bar. Well, what you don't know doesn't hurt you. My name would be Antonio, and all my bridges I would burn. And if I gave them some, they'd know I expect something in return. I'd have to get drunk every night to talk about virility with some old grandmother who might be decked out like a Christmas tree. And though pink elephants I'd see, though I'd be drunk as I could be, still I would sing my song to me about the time they called me Jackie. If I could be for only an hour, if I could be for an hour every day, if I could be for just one little hour, cute, 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 in a stupid-ass way. And if I joined the social world, became procurer of young girls, then I would have my own bordellos. My record would be number one, and I'd sell records by the ton, all sung by many other fellows. My name would then be Handsome Jack, and I'd sell boats of opium, whiskey that came from Twickenham, authentic queers, and phony virgin. I'd have a bank on every finger, a finger in every country, in every country ruled by me. I still know where I'd want to be. Locked up inside my opium den, surrounded by some Chinamen, I'd sing the song that I sang then, about the time they called me Jackie. If I could be for only an hour, if I could be for an hour every day, if I could be for just one little hour, cute, 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 in a stupid-ass way. Now tell me, wouldn't it be nice that if one day in paradise I sang for all the ladies up there?
Well, this is very good. It's just not the one I was thinking about.
But it was very entertaining.
It's a great song.
Yeah. No, I thought I had selected one that had all four in it, yeah. But that's okay. You still get another flavor of Jacques Brel.
Absolutely. And that song, Jackie, is performed every night marvelously by Mark Francoeur, who plays, you know, the well-titled or well-named character, Man Number One.
The show is running for 4 weeks, right?
8 weeks, actually.
Oh, gosh.
So through the end of August at the Odyssey Theater in West L.A. on Sepulveda.
Yeah. Ron Sossi, it's great. He once intimated to me, you know, I really sing.
He is a trained singer and has a fantastic voice.
Well, I know this because I was a student at the University of Michigan, which didn't have a theater department in 1960, but every year they would do a spring musical, and they would, anyone who could be in it, you had faculty wives and teachers and people who worked in the student union, and my senior year they did Kismet.
Oh,
and goodness. The person who played Hajj the Beggar, the lead, was Jack O'Brien.
Oh, wow.
And the person who played the second, well, the his aide and assistant, Omar the Tent Maker, was Ron Saucy.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic.
And I was the lead dancer in the show.
That sounds like an amazing production. I would have killed to see that.
And during that time, Ron Saucy was one of the best singers in the show, and then he sort of disappeared. But he had told me, he said his secret ambition was to do the Jacques Brel musical. Here's my
He's been hiding out at the Odyssey Theater since, you know what, 19. I don't know, for the last 47,
absolutely,
45
yeah,
years.
At least, right.
I got it. Three Penny Opera, Brecht musical.
Oh, right.
He wanted to play the lead in that.
Oh.
And he was always going to bring that production back, and he didn't.
Well, Ron, if you're listening, you owe Julio a production of Three Penny Opera.
We want it.
You know, this is, as I said before, you know, this is a show that is not done every day. You know, I think it was done a few years back. Actually, there was a lovely production of it that director John Lawrence Rivera did a few years ago. But it's really a production that's not seen much. And this is music that deserves to be heard and deserves to be performed, because it is such a personal experience for an audience, I think. As an audience member, and now I'm at the point with the show where I can go and watch it without my director's hat on. And it's affecting and effective. And as I said, it really deserves to be heard. And there are themes in here that really hit close to home, I think, for an audience, for me in particular. And
are you tempted to dibble and dabble with it, as the original people were?
You know, we've dabbled and dibbled so much, I think, right until right before opening night, I think we finished dibbling.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you're always wanting to find what is absolutely perfect. And because there are so many layers to this music and this song, and so much meaning, you know, we've been sort of architects, I think, excavating these songs and finding layer upon layer. And as we find one meaning, suddenly another meaning pops up. And then we think, oh, well, this second meaning could relate to this other song if we did this. And then, so you find yourself sort of mired in this maze of of theater, which is both fascinating and very frustrating.
Susan, what songs do you sing in the show?
I sing Sons of, mm-hmm. which I know a lot of people do know, and that is a very emotional song for me because I do take it from a point of view of really what is going on, you know, when we send our sons off and we say goodbye to them. And I do Marik.
Ah, yes.
And I do No Love, You're Not Alone. Mm-hmm. And I do... I'm being coached here by my sidekick.
I was trying to... Michael.
Michael's telling me, you do My Death, My Death. Yeah.
Which is beautiful.
And I loved.
So. Terry said there are songs that invariably someone came to tears on, in the show. And I was wondering if it still has that emotional effect.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in tears every night. At the same point a lot, but then also at different points. Every night, it's another song or another moment in a song will affect me in a way that it hadn't before. You know, it is very emotional, and everyone is so connected. And as Susan said, there are four of us. We're all we've got up there, and so to you know,
and you can't hide.
There's no hiding. It's an open stage. You have nothing but each other, and it is very, very emotional. The songs get you.
They really do. There are times when you're even at home and you've been working on them for a while, and all of a sudden you reach a point where it touches you again. And we've all had moments at home where it even brought us to tears mm-hmm. as we're trying to understand, you know, how we want to express ourselves through these emotions.
Mark Francoeur, who plays Man Number One, tells the same story, which I want to tell it now because it's fantastic. That he's at home doing dishes on a regular basis and then breaks out into tears because something in one of his songs
will hit him
at home. Which is a wonderful image, you know, if you know Mark, of him both doing dishes and crying at the same time. But there, as I said, they're affecting songs, and it's tough not for them not to get you. And you sort of wonder as you're watching this thing, where's it all going to end up? Because it feels like chaos as you're watching it, and it feels like this sort of overwhelming, just emotion after emotion after emotion. And where's it going to end? And it builds. The show builds to a climax in the song Carousel at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. Where it sort of talks about life being on an unstoppable carousel, and we sort of watch the world around us going around and around and around, and sort of where it stops, no one knows. And then the show sort of resolves at the very, very end in the final song, If We Only Have Love, which is such a gorgeous song, and it incidentally is translated differently than it's written in French. In French, the translated direct translation of the title is When We Have Love, or When We Only Have Love. And the American translators changed it to If We Only Have Love, which makes it, I think, almost more appropriate for today's world, saying that we have a role as human beings in whether or not we want it. Whether or not we want love and peace and harmony in the world, it's our choice.
The show runs, or tell me again.
The show runs weekends, Fridays through Sundays, some Thursdays and Wednesdays at the Odyssey Theater in West L.A. at odysseytheater.com. That's odysseytheatre.com. I'm told that there is a special discount code set up for KPFK listeners. If you go online, you can get $10 off with code KPFK. So please come see us. We'd love to see you over at the Odyssey. We've got a show tonight. It's our next one.
Mm-hmm. And I want to let people know that following my show is Pacifica Performance Showcase. Donna Walker, my producer, is the host of that. And her guest is the eminent composer, Michael Roth, whose show Imagination / Dead / Imagine is at the Broad Stage this Sunday. It's an adaptation of of some phenomenal poetry and prose. And it's one night only. It'll be this Sunday at 4 p.m., I believe. So I want you all to go support this and stay tuned. And I want to let you know that Arts and Review and Pacifica Performance Showcase are the linchpin of arts and culture here at KPFK. We come here every Friday, 2 to 3. I'm on 2 to 2:30. And Donna Walker's Pacifica Performance Showcase follows at 2:30 to 3. And we want to thank you for supporting KPFK, because listener sponsorship is the only reason we exists. And I want to thank my guests. Let's see if I can say this.
All right, go for it.
Dan Fishback.
There we go.
Yes. There we go. Susan Kohler and Michael Yapugian. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
God, that was improv.
I still can't even say it right.
There are lots of vowels.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for supporting Live Theater in L.A.
And we will be back next Friday, and we'll have a membership drive. Please stay tuned. Support KPFK. We have wonderful gifts that we give for doing that, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.